Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to the UFC Vegas 5 live post-fight show here on the MMA Fighting YouTube channel. Hope you guys enjoyed the card. It was absolutely chaotic. We had 12 shuffles overall between cancellations and weight misses and fights being called last minute. We had 8 fights total. We had 10 low blows. We had a couple of eye gouges and pokes, a couple of fence grabs. We had a little bit of everything today. 2 feints as well. I don't know if we ever had 2 feints on a card. And I'm not trying to make light of that. I'm just trying to add up all the crazy numbers. So on a chaos scale, this is like a 25 for UFC Vegas 5. But in the end, Derek Brunson gets a huge finish of Edmund Shahbazyan. We're going to talk all about that with all of you guys. This is your show. It's the People's Post-Fight Show. So if you guys got questions, thoughts, concerns, anything you want to talk about, matchmaking ideas for me and AK for On to the Next One, leave them in the comments. We just want to talk to all of you guys. But introducing my co-hosts and cohorts here, we have Alexander K. Lee. We have E. Casey Lydon. Alex, you know what the first question is going to be. It's always the first question. What are we grading this thing from start to finish? Because this is a little more interesting to talk about because we had so many changes and so many crazy things happen in the buildup and then during the fight night itself.
I think this is the first time that we have to give a card an I. I don't know if I remember people getting those in school. An I for incomplete because this card fell apart. It would be almost unfair to judge the quality of the fights and the fighters that competed on it and the UFC staff who scrambled to put all this stuff together because they lost fights last what we thought was the last second on Friday, but that was not the last second. The last second turned out tonight, literally minutes before the first fight of the main card where they lost Trevin Giles and Kevin Holland. So I'm going to go incomplete. It was really hard to even think about like afterwards the things that actually happened. Because I was thinking a lot about the stuff that didn't happen. So we're going with the very first I on our post-fight show.
I might have to give it an N because Spike DeVito just said this fight card was quote-unquote nuts.
well done, Spike.
That means
well.
Multiple things. Well played.
Double entendre.
I'm gonna give it, you're going with the I. I'm going with like an S+. So like when I was in elementary school, yeah. We would get grades for subjects, but then you'd get like grades for – you know, your effort and your conduct and all this stuff. And S was like satisfactory. S- was like not so satisfactory. S+, I'll give it an S+. I'm not going to give it a letter grade, but I think considering all the chaos that ensued, I think the UFC handled themselves very well and was able to put on a nice card. And it's 12:22 a.m. Eastern time. And we're past the post-fight press conferences and on the post-fight show. That deserves the plus in my book. E. Casey Lydon, what do you think? All things considered, this is 2020 entirely.
This card got a participation ribbon. Just a nice ribbon, stick it on there, bring it, have your parents take a photo, you know, and yeah, that's what this card was. This card was not a good card for the UFC matchmakers as far as building up the bigger fights. Obviously they wanted Edmund as far as the promotion, they definitely wanted Edmund to win. I mean, I didn't see one promo talking about Derek Brunson and whatever his story to get here. It was always about Edmund. So they put a lot of promotional time into Edmund. So I'm sure they were not happy with the results. And JoJo losing, I don't think as far as like moving the needle, I don't know if Maya moves the needle more than JoJo. So participation ribbon.
Okay, fair enough. So let's talk about the main event, AK. Derek Brunson gets it done, and we talked about this a lot during the buildup and throughout the week and on Between the Links, that Derek Brunson has all has been a hype derailer. That's what he does. Like, he gets put in these positions when he gets to the upper echelon, hasn't really been able to get over that hump. But tonight he kind of had a combination of the two. He could derail a hype train and kind of get over the hump in a main event and in a big spot. And he accomplished both of those things. So your thoughts on Derek Brunson's performance and, you know, how much his stock may have rose tonight.
I think it should rise more than some people would think at first glance, because no, this does not break the other, you know, Derek Brunson narrative that he can't beat like a top name like Anderson Silva, which I did a robbery review. I think he did beat him, but either way, does not have a win over Anderson Silva. Yoel Romero, Jacare Souza twice in his career. He's fought him and lost to him. Robert Whitaker. So he, Israel Adesanya, the current champion. So we didn't get to see that yet. You know, instead this was another, can he hold off another prospect? Which he did. And he did that to Ian Heinisch. He did that to Elias Theodoro. He's done that to other people in the past. But you have to watch the fight. And we talked a little bit about this on the during the post-fight press conference. You have to watch the fight to really see that he is a better fighter, even than the guy who got first round finishes of like Uriah Hall and Sam Alvey and guys like that. He just looks so mature and so poised and looks so perfectly equipped to deal with this specific opponent. His game planning looked perfect. His approach was perfect from the start. After a competitive first round, it looked like he wore Shabazzian down and took control. So no, it doesn't change a lot of the major storylines around Derek Brunson's career, but I hope people will actually watch the fight and see like, man, this is as legit as he's looked as a contender.
Yeah, I think you really started to see him turn the corner in the Ian Heinisch fight, because obviously this wasn't as big of a fight, the lights weren't as bright as tonight was on him, but you really got to see how much more improved he's got. Like, he wasn't a crazy knockout guy. He wasn't going to meet in the middle and just throw wild hands like he did in the Robert Whitaker fight. This is a composed guy who had a game plan and stuck to it and won. And we've seen that ever since then. And then tonight he really put it all together. Casey, was this the best Derek Brunson you've ever seen at this point? I can't hear.
Oh, Casey, I think you're muted. Oh,
sorry, muted. Rookie mistake.
Okay. Ben, there you go.
What are you, me? What are you? Okay, what an Alex move.
He got dunked on. I don't know if this is the best Derek Brunson, but this is who Derek Brunson is. He's a very good top 10 middleweight. And I know Derek Brunson thinks otherwise, but like, I just never see Derek Brunson fighting for the title. I just don't. But I see him up there. And I see him, like I said, when he faced those top guys, the Jacarés, we'll never fought for a title, but, you know, the guys who are just perennial top five guys, Derek Brunson just can't beat those guys. And Edmund Shabazzian, at this point in time, isn't a top five fighter. He's a very good prospect who beat the crap out of some other decent middleweights. But he just ran into a better fighter tonight, and Derek Brunson showed up. And I think he is learning from all those reckless performances he's had in his past.
I think you match him up with Hermanson and see where he goes. Winner of that. I mean, we got some big fights coming up at 85. We got the title fight, and then we got Cannonier versus Whitaker. So there's still some things that need to happen before the Hermansons or the Brunsons or any of those guys can even sniff a title shot. But I think that's what we do next few months, October maybe. We do Brunson versus Hermanson, and if Brunson can have a similar performance and finish Hermanson, then we know, like, okay, we got something here. We're cooking with fire a little bit. But until then, we gotta wait and see. But it was a great performance from him tonight. And then Edmund Shabazzian is in an interesting place. We're gonna talk more about him on to the next one, which will drop Monday morning, on what could be next for him. But we'll touch briefly on Edmund, AK. Your thoughts on his performance? And, you know, sometimes it's just like college football. Sometimes if you're like in Alabama and you're winning 63-0 every week, sometimes you get to run into an LSU and lose on a last second field goal. And this may have happened here. You need the loss to refuel you. And maybe that's what happened tonight. So what did you think of Shabazzian and, you know, kind of what his mentality might be?
Look, he's obviously a great talent. Okay, I think maybe the marketing was a little over the top, but it's also understandable given how many good hooks he has. 22 years old, 4-0 in the UFC, unbeaten in his career, 3 straight first round finishes. The Ronda Rousey connection, the Coach Edmund connection, of course. So there was a lot of good hooks. I totally understand. I think he looked good, but for some of the first round. But he really just ran into a guy who knew exactly what to how to make him uncomfortable. You know, he just got right in his face. He didn't let Shabazzian get into any sort of rhythm, and that frustrated him. And I think so mentally and physically when the second round came along, it was really Brunson with a major advantage. So I don't think I hate to use the word exposes. I hate people say, "Oh, this guy was exposed." Brunson's a very good fighter. He has three times the amount of UFC experience as Edmund Shabazzian. He's 14 years older than him, which is in this case, I think, is a benefit and not a bad thing. So I don't think this should derail the Shabazzian hype train that much. I think we could easily see him go on another run. You know, as cliche as it sounds, this is one of those situations where a fighter like him will benefit more from this loss and it happening now in the long run.
I would agree with that 100%. Some news to share with everybody from Oren Hodak, the manager of Trevin Giles on Twitter, said Trevin Giles will remain at the hospital overnight for further medical evaluation. Thank you to everyone for the thoughts and concerns. So Trevin Giles is going to stick around in the hospital tonight after fainting prior to his scheduled matchup with Kevin Holland, which obviously did not happen tonight. Dana White said it. I confirmed that earlier on the post-fight press conference. Kevin Holland is going to fight next Saturday. Who he's fighting, we don't know yet. There is no opponent yet for Kevin Holland, but expect to see him compete next Saturday. Against whom, I don't know, but that's where we're at right now. So all the best to Trevin Giles, all the best to Joanne Calderwood. We found out that she fainted as well following her loss to Jennifer Maya. Let me see if I can pull that up real quick just so I can kind of give you guys the skinny on the Joanne Calderwood situation, because that came up really suddenly at the press conference. But Ariel Helwani from ESPN, quote from her manager, Daniel Rubenstein: she was getting checked out in the medical room and fainted while sitting down. John Wood, her coach, and her fiance caught her. They laid her down and carted her out on a stretcher. Her heart rate dropped on the way there, but stabilized now. She's awake now at the hospital. They don't know what caused it yet. So just a crazy, crazy set of circumstances in multiple different ways tonight, especially that. And we wish all the best to Trevin Giles and Joanne Calderwood. But let's talk about Jennifer Maya, what she did tonight, Alex Kaylee, because wow, comes out of nowhere. Joanne Calderwood is next in line to fight Valentina Shevchenko whenever she's healthy and ready to go. Joanne said, nope, I'm not waiting. I'm going to fight Jennifer Maya instead. And Jennifer Maya made weight, which is huge. And then she went out there and looked fantastic, looked great on the feet. Once that fight hit the ground, JoJo couldn't get anything going, and she ends up submitting Joanne Calderwood via armbar in the first round. And Dana White said at the post-fight press conference, she is going to fight Valentina Shevchenko ASAP, according to Dana White. What did you think of Jennifer Meyer's performance and her chances against someone who many believe is unbeatable at 125 pounds right now?
It's almost unfortunate for Maya that this was a little bit like the main event in which I think Joanne Calderwood was clearly perceived, I think, by most of the fans and some of us in the media as well, as the A side, because we've known her for longer. I think she's very much a fan favorite. She is the number one contender. I mean, she was in talk. I don't remember if it was actually scheduled, but she was supposed to fight Shevchenko. That title shot was hers. Then Shevchenko had an injury, and then, you know, Calderwood said, "Well, I'm not going to wait around. I'm going to take a fight." So now there was a story going into this fight with should JoJo have done this, and not a lot of talk about, like, you know, how good is Maya, because her results have been a little bit mixed in the UFC. She's missed weight her last two fights. That's not something people ever like. But Maya is very skilled. She's a former Invicta champion, and she showed the best version of herself tonight with some very, very sharp boxing. She has legitimate power at 125 pounds, and that ground game was no joke. And she was just consistently beating Calderwood to the punch. You know, say what you want. If JoJo was off, she shouldn't have taken this fight. That doesn't matter, because Maya came fully prepared, and she looked outstanding in this performance. So she was winning. She was winning the striking. She won on the ground. She finished on the ground. She's worthy of a title shot. Again, does anyone seem like a worthy challenger to Shevchenko? Probably not right now. So Maya is as good a name as any, I think.
Casey, are you surprised that Dana White pulled the trigger on saying yes for Jennifer Maya? She deserves it. She had a great performance tonight, but like Alex said, she has missed weight a couple of times. She missed in her last two fights. So when someone says, like, she has exercised the demons on the scales because she made it once, I'm not necessarily buying that completely. Do it once. Okay, great. Good job. Do it twice. All right, we're getting there. Do it three times in a row. All right, now we're good to go. You got Cynthia Calvillo, who had that win over Jessica Eye, and we were discussing this right after that win. If they gave Cynthia Calvillo the title shot, we'd be like, we wouldn't be that shocked about it. But to immediately commit to Jennifer Maia, when Dana White normally doesn't do that, it's always like, we got to get to the meeting on Tuesday, then we'll talk about it. Are you surprised by that?
Not at all, because I think usually when we hear about these, when people, when the consensus is that this person should get a title shot and Dana's kind of like iffy about it, usually it revolves around money. But I don't think Jennifer Maia is necessarily a very expensive fighter. So I think I think her asking price is going to be reasonable to take that championship fight against Shevchenko. And not surprised. And she deserves it. And as far as the weight cut thing, take note, she didn't make just weight. She made championship weight. And she came in under championship weight. And I do think that was on purpose. And I've seen Jennifer Maia fight many times in Invicta. And as far as I recall, I never recall her missing weight in Invicta. So I just think, you know, these things happen. You know, she wound up missing weight. And but even in her losses in the UFC, when she lost against Chookagian and Carmouche, it wasn't like she was blown out of the water. And those are two women who fought for the title, too. So Maia absolutely deserves a title shot. And just poor JoJo, man. She rolled the dice and sucks.
And then you run Calvillo versus Lauren Murphy. And
I like that fight. Yeah, that sounds great.
There you go. We got one. We got 125 match made for you already. We're good to go.
Hey, Dana, why can't Dana give Aljamain Sterling the same courtesy that he gave Jennifer Maia? Though I think Casey may have already answered that question. So if anyone wants to answer to that, maybe just go back and review what he said about the reasons why sometimes people don't get named the number one contender right away. So
yes, if you actually watched the post-fight press conference with Dana White after UFC 250, he did say Aljamain Sterling was next.
What?
He said it. Yes. He said, yep, he's next.
Why is he waffling on it now?
Yes, the tune has changed. He has changed not only the tune, but the whole CD, the whole radio station. Yeah. Changed the presets and everything on this whole situation at 135. It's absolutely bananas. Absolutely bananas. Now we got Garbrandt thinking of dropping a 25. Manel Cape wants to fight Cody Garbage. I love it. So we got a lot of good stuff going on all
wow,
over.
Wow, Cody Garbage.
Whoa.
Yes. Hashtag what the heck. Vicente Luque got a bonus tonight. Derek Brunson did not get a bonus, by the way, but Vicente Luque got a bonus. Jennifer Maia got a bonus. And then the fight at night went to Bobby Green versus Lando Venata. AK, I know you were very impressed by Vicente Luque and his finish tonight. Share it with us. Share your enthusiasm for Vicente
Luque. Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize what had happened at first. I knew it was a clean knee. That was not in question, I think. So people who saw don't recall the finish, he had Randy Brown up against the fence. Randy Brown was kind of punched over, almost in that four-point position, but not quite. And Luque recognized that he was somewhat vulnerable to a knee. And before Randy Brown could drop all the way down, Luque kind of got his hands, I don't know if on his face or kind of on his upper body and his shoulder, to keep him from touching the mat, leaving him just a very small window to land a knee. Luque shot it right in there, right to the chin, and that was it. And then just a few follow-up shots, it was over. So you don't see that kind of wherewithal, that kind of forethought very often. Especially in a moment like that, where you get it wrong, you're getting a point taken or disqualified. But Luque is the elite of the elite when it comes to finishing fights, and only guys with that kind of ability can find a finish in that situation. So that was. I don't know if it was more deserving of a bonus than Brunson, but it was a very, very good finish.
Yeah, I think especially with all the fight cancellations, they all should have got a bonus. All of them: Brunson, Maia, Luque, then the fight of the night. And if Jonathan Martinez had made weight, he should have got a bonus as well. But
yeah, what are they doing with this money that they're saving exactly? So can I just jump to this, Michael? I'm a little disgruntled.
Sure. Yeah, I would love to.
Me too.
So our own Stephen Morocco tweeted this out, and there were other reports, but our own Stephen Morocco wrote that he just heard Dana White personally called Ed Herman. Oh, sorry. This is the wrong thing. This is another topic. But Stephen Morocco also mentioned that from the press conference that the fighters got, who didn't fight tonight because of various reasons, got some money, but not all of their money. Now, first I'll say, obviously the plan I imagine would be to reschedule these fighters as quickly as possible. That's usually the justification that Dana White and the UFC gives for why they might not pay someone their full pay. Like, oh, we'll get them another fight in a couple of weeks. But I just understand they did their job. They did with everything they were required to do. Like Kevin Holland, he did everything he was required to do for his fight tonight. Pay the man his show money. That's what I would say if I was Kevin Holland. F you, pay me mother effer, and book me another fight next weekend, and pay me again. You can afford it. The UFC can afford it, people. I'm sorry. I know. We live in this this world where people say, oh, you should have to. You got to earn. You got to earn your pay. But these people, and you're right. You got to earn your win money. But your show money, most of these fighters did that. Kevin Holland showed up and weighed in. Ed Herman showed up and weighed in. Pay these people. This is ridiculous.
Okay. Casey, I know you forgot some things to say, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here before we go to you, because the question that was asked to Dana White at the press conference was, will Kevin Holland get his win money? And Dana said he's going to get some money, and then we're going to turn him around. So I don't think the word show money
He did say show money. He said they won't be. He said it's not their show money.
Oh, he did say that. Okay. Because I know the question was win money. I heard some money. I didn't hear whether or not it was show money.
Yeah. And the very end, he did say show money. So I'm.
That they won't get show money?
They will not. I'm pretty confident.
So devil's advocate, gone.
But either way, I just think it's like even the guys who, like Mearshart, guys who made weight, did everything they're supposed to do. We're living in a pandemic era. Like, can you imagine, like, if these NBA players or MLB players, like, if they get the virus, they still get paid. You know, I just feel bad for these guys because this is completely out of their control. Like, Mearshart probably got it in the bubble because when they arrive to Vegas, they get tested. Then they get tested weigh-in day. Then they get tested on the fight day. So in between then and then, somehow he got it. So does that mean he got it in the bubble? You know, in the little UFC fight week bubble? So, I mean, guys, you need to freaking get some sort of unionize or something and figure out, like, because this is going to be a big issue until this pandemic is done with, which I feel like we're going to have another year of this, maybe, I don't know, who knows, but that's another issue. But, these guys need to get paid, and I just think it's really unfair that a lot of these guys aren't getting paid. And you know what? In the UFC, by contract or whatever, yeah, they don't have to pay him. That's on them. But not having to, and what you should do, is something different.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with both of you guys. I just don't know. We don't really know, like, really, like what he said. Like, we don't know if, like, maybe Dana offered them to be like maybe Mearshart's probably like a different story altogether because he's not going to be fighting anytime soon. But maybe he like went to Holland and maybe went to Herman and Perez and said, listen, we'll give you the choice. I'll give you some money now and you can fight next Saturday and get a chance to get your win money too. And you'll get this. Or you can just take your show money and go home and you can fight later. And
maybe they shouldn't have to choose though. That's the thing.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
This is the pandemic world we're in.
I'll read the other thing I was reading up before by accident that Morocco said, just because we're still talking about how these fights were canceled, that Ed Herman was supposedly they want to see if they can make because Ed Herman lost his opponent. He lost to Gerald Mearshart as an opponent, and Kevin Holland lost Trevin Giles. So apparently Dana White did call Ed Herman and asked him if he could take the fight. And Herman, as Steve Morocco, already had drinks in hand and was out of the bubble, so to speak. So no dice. So that was kind of weird. Weird really sums up everything that's happened in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, because that was once we found out, because Holland and Giles was supposed to be the first fight on the main card. So by the time we found out that Mearshart was out, that was at 5:30 Eastern time. That's like 3.5 hours. And no fighter on earth could be like, oh, maybe someone will faint and I'll have the opportunity to fight. So Ed Herman was probably like, get me a beer, give me an ice cold Herman Weiser. I'm going to suck that thing down and give me another
There is one guy, Khamzat Chimaev. He's the kind of guy who would just immediately go back to the locker room, I feel like, and just sit down and watch the monitors and be like, just wait, just tell me, just let me know, just let me know. Just give me, just let me know. Because he definitely, that's crazy. What's crazy is I feel like if this is something that has happened last week, I don't think the commission would have allowed it, but he would have been jumping at the chance to fight Kevin Holland or something like that. So just crazy.
That'd be a fun fight.
I want to give the UFC Dana some credit, though. The fact that they did try to get Herman that fight. And, like, can you imagine if the UFC booked a high-level UFC fight in 15 minutes or something like that? It was like, that would be taken to the next level from our expectations of UFC filling in fights. But, unfortunately, Ed Herman decided to part, You said the story.
I texted Holland's manager and I said, all I have to say to you is this, please make this happen. Please make this happen. And then he goes, no, Herman's already had beers, I'm told, so he won't be fighting tonight. I'm like, oh, man, that would have been amazing. Oh, my God, that's Ed Herman's music. Where did this come from? And that's Kevin Holland's music. Holy shit. Unreal.
And look, Gilbert Burns was in the building. He's probably around 185 right now. You could throw him in there.
I was waiting for James Krause's music to hit. Because I know he threw his name out there. He goes, I think somebody needs a middleweight.
Hey, you know what? If the world goes even more wacky as it are – than it already is, I can see in a couple months where the UFC just calls about 30 fighters. Hey guys, stay in shape. And then in the night of the fight, we just find out who's fighting by the music, you know, just,
yeah.
It'd be so exciting.
Like Battle Bowl, like yeah. Starcade Battle Bowl. You're just sitting in the back and they pull name. They wheel the thing up and they start pulling names out and then you come down and fight. I love that idea.
You definitely throw Khabib and Tony's name in there just in case, maybe that's the only way that fight happens. You know,
I mean, quarter serious in the sense that, I mean, this whole card, how many of these fights actually the fighters had a traditional fight camp? You know, give it like 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I mean, I'm not even sure. You know what I mean? Like both sides, A side and the B side, both had a traditional.
Both sides?
Yeah.
A traditional, you know, 4 week fight camp.
Probably just the main event.
And look, this was as close as you guys were talking about to literally just having guys just jump in. I mean, again, we had Vincent Cachero essentially 1 day's notice. Johnny Munoz essentially 1 day's notice. Charles Ontiveros was going to jump in and fight Marcus Perez, but for whatever reason was not cleared by the commission. I think couldn't make the weight safely. So that was three people who were about to fight on 1 day's notice. So this whole random draw idea is not that crazy, actually, given what we just saw.
I love it. We're shaking even, things up.
Sarah Kaufman, when in our interview with her on A-Side, she said, well, part of the reason why I'm in Vegas helping up JoJo's camp is because I'm on weight right now, so I can fill in for any 45 or 35 fight. So, I mean, like, so fighters are obviously, this is out there. They're thinking this, you know, so managers are like, if you're just a fighter sitting around looking for a contract, try to be within, you know, yeah, just start hitting the treadmill right now. That's all.
Gerald Harris said he's going out to Vegas next week and he's going to be ready.
The Terry Funk of MMA. by the way, Sarah Kaufman also said that she does not drink milk and that she hates milk. So we should take things that Sarah Kaufman says with a grain of salt. Okay. Shout out YouTube comments. Shout out all my milk lovers out there. All right. Just leave a comment if you like milk or if you can find the milk emoji, throw that one in there. Milk rules.
The Kurt Angle of MMA fighting. Alex Gailey, everybody.
100%.
Drink your milk, everyone. Can I just say that I think the MVP of the night was Bobby Green. He was awesome. Performance was great. The Triple H spit out the water after his name was announced. Like he knew it was coming and spit it out.
That was a COVID
thing. Yeah. Mid-COVID, by the way.
Yeah, the
cameraman got 90% of that water.
Toast. And the post-fight interview was tremendous too. Bobby Green is slowly becoming one of my like favorite fighters to keep an eye on after these last two performances and everything that happened. That fight with Lando was great, but Bobby Green, my MVP. Second place, Gilbert Burns gets a corner victory. It gets a A+ translation tonight for Jennifer Maia. Did great, and I had a third one too. I forgot who my third one was. Maybe Brendan Fitzgerald for his amazing different statements every time there was a low blow tonight. Oh,
and there were so many.
Ten low blows.
Eight fights.
The UFC has changed so much over the years. Like we had 10 low blows tonight, and I didn't hear the one mention of Diamond Cup. Not one mention.
And we actually had a point taken away for a low blow. When was the last time you've seen that?
One point out of 10 low blows. Think about that. 10 low blows, and there was one time it was penalized. So fighters, I hate to keep saying it, but Jed Meshew and I always preach this, but fighters out there, take note of what you can get away with, okay? There was 10 low blows in this card, and only one point got taken away. So we're just saying.
Eye pokes, fence grabs, only 1 point.
Use the holy trinity of fouls, okay?
Yes. I say we go to the peeps now. I mean, there's some other great performances.
Well, I want to shout out Sandy Pham, first of all, who said milk, yay, even though she's lactose intolerant. So that's how dope milk is, all right? That's how sick milk is.
Oh,
let's see what the peeps have to say. I'm sure there's tons of milk questions.
There we go. Right there.
There you go.
You're on the screen, Sandy.
three glasses of milk.
Respect.
All right, let me queue up. We had lots of questions before.
We're all over the place. The people's post fight show, ladies and gentlemen.
There we go.
What about Jessica I versus Jessica Andrade at 125 and Holly versus Irene Aldana from Joseph Boza? So if you hadn't heard, Jessica I versus Jessica Andrade is gonna happen. This fight is happening. They're going to give Jessica I another shot at 25. Hopefully she can make the weight. And, you know, welcome back. You get to fight Jessica Andrade, Jessica I. What do you think of this fight, AK?
I mean, I love it. Like, I think it was always kind of, well, not weird, because it was her only option at the time, Jessica Andrade going from 135 down to 115, because there was no 125. So even though she was, she was so good at 115, you know, a world title winner, there was always that kind of thought like, man, could she do 125 too? Because she won fights at 135. She won fights at 115, obviously. So why not? Why not in between? And she's perfect for Jessica I because I has had some uneventful fights, to put it nicely. She's not always a fight of the night contender. And Andrade kind of on the other side. I don't know if Andrade has been in a boring fight, maybe early in her career, I'm forgetting, but she's always an exciting fight. So I think you put her in there with I think it's a good mix of styles, and I think you'll get the best out of both of them. So yeah, I really like that matchup.
Casey, Holly versus Irene Aldana. I think that's the fight that needs to happen at this point. Maybe October. I think that's being targeted at this point. Are you happy with this fight, or should the UFC shuffle the deck like tonight's theme?
I do not like that fight. I'm like with Jose Young, so he's been saying a lot. I hate that Holly Irene fight, because I think Irene has already earned that title shot. But unfortunately, due with Amanda Nunes having a child or her wife having a child very soon, is she taking a break? As Amanda Nunes kind of even publicly said, is she just taking a break right now? Do we know?
She's talked about maybe retiring. She hasn't like actually said, I'm definitely out, but I could retire. I've done everything I need to do in the sport. So, I mean, I would say if a fight excites her, she'll come back.
Yeah. So, because to me, like Irene would have to just steamroll Holly to excite Amanda Nunes to come back. So, it's a fight. I'm excited about the actual fight itself. But as far as the title implications, I just think it's unnecessary. But Jessica I versus Jessica Andrade, freaking rules. I love that fight. And I want to see Jessica Andrade not doing the big weight cut to 115. Let's see, maybe it was, because remember, she went from 135 straight to 115. She's, I think at the
20
time.
20 pounds.
I think at the time, there was no flyweight division, right? When she did the drop. Yeah. So that was insane. And remember at 35, she was still like a decent top 10, borderline top 10 35er. So very excited about that, and good luck, Jessica I.
Yeah, I'm down for both at this point. Let's just see them play out, and then we'll go from there. What else we got?
This fight. Bobby Green versus Bryce Mitchell. Sorry, that doesn't make any sense.
Sorry. Bobby Green's 55er anyways.
Yeah. You know what this is about? I don't even know what this question is.
What about the fight that the bell went off 3 seconds before the time ran out? Yeah, I don't remember that.
See that. I wonder. I don't know where Gerardo Granados was watching this fight from. He could have been watching a different channel, maybe not ESPN Plus, maybe in another country. Because sometimes the on-screen timer. I wonder if they use a different one sometimes, and it's different from what we're necessarily seeing. Are necessarily seeing and hearing in the in the actual venue. So I did not. I watch up in Canada on TSN, and you guys were watching on ESPN Plus. I don't recall seeing this happen. So Gerardo, if you want to clarify in the YouTube comments, please do. But we didn't see. No, we didn't see that.
I think the weirdest one of those that I've ever seen was I was covering a Bellator card, and Lindsey Van Zandt was fighting somebody, and the horn went off with like 90 seconds left in a round. Like during the Bellator card, and like both women like stopped, and the referee's like, "What are you doing?" Like, the freaking horn went off. No, keep going. So that was a crazy one. Brunson versus Gastelum from Michael Panza. I will start with this one. Don't hate the idea. If they booked it, I would be okay with it. But I think Brunson deserves somebody a little higher on the pole right now, if we're being honest. I think the Hermanson fight makes all the sense in the world. I thought most people thought if Shabazzian won, it would be the Hermanson fight, especially after the Whitaker Cannonier fight got booked. So I think Brunson deserves the same thing after that performance tonight. I think you gotta get him a top five, top six matchup and see where he is. Is he the guy that can get over the hump? Can he get that one step closer to a title shot? You put him in those kinds of matchups, and I think him and Hermanson would be a really good fight. So that's what I think. Your thoughts? Casey, we'll start with you. Brunson versus Gastelum.
I don't love this one. I think Gastelum. Brunson's. If Brunson defeats Gastelum, it really doesn't do anything for Derek Brunson to me. So obviously Kelvin would probably want that fight because that will put him back up there. But for Derek, I just don't think it's a smart fight career wise for him.
Okay.
I wasn't sure what to do with Brunson if he won, you know, heading into this. But as we learned recently, Whitaker is now occupied. I thought that the winner of the Whitaker Till fight was the logical matchup for Hermanson. But now that that's off the table, I guess we do have to kind of go with Brunson and Hermanson. But I liked, you know, Hermanson's elaborate plan to have Cannonier not fight Whitaker, but instead get the title fight against the Costa Adesanya winner. But that's not on the cards. So yeah, either Brunson, Hermanson, or Brunson rematches the winner of Uriah Hall, Yoel Romero. If Romero wins. I don't know if him rematching Uriah Hall makes sense. If Romero beats Uriah Hall, I wouldn't mind seeing Brunson run that back and kind of get another shot, because he actually did very well in that first fight before Romero showed up.
No. But what happened? It wasn't third round Romero. Do you remember? It was all the nut shots. Remember he got. Dude,
I should have remembered.
Rewatch Brunson Romero. That fight completely changed when Brunson, you know, got hey'd, you know. So so actually, you know what? If Romero does win, I would absolutely love to see Brunson Romero rematch. I think that would be awesome.
He deserves another crack at him.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa, get out of here.
We already talked about this. Darren Till versus the winner, Yoel Romero versus Uriah Hall. That's the fight to make. And then Kelvin, I'll tell you what, if Omari Akhmedov beats Chris Weidman next week, that's the fight for Kelvin Gastelum. You're welcome, world. Jermaine King, what does Shabazzian need to work on after this loss?
Everything.
Okay, I'll start with you.
Everything. And that's not in a harsh way. He's 22 years old.
Yeah.
He's 22 years old. I think you take a 22-year-old fighter and like try to find one thing like, oh, he needs to work on takedown defense or cardio or striking defense or just, you know, defense in general. He's 22. He needs to work on everything because the tools are there. Like we said, the kind of accuracy he has with the strikes, his grappling skills, he's already very advanced in that. But I mean, I think as we saw tonight, again, you run into someone who's just a little more poised than you, a little bit, you know, more experienced with certain situations. And this is what happens. You're going to lose fights. So Brunson is the better fighter at this stage of their career. You know, this was no fluke, and that's fine. Again, like I mentioned before, has three times as much UFC experience. He's 14 years older than Edmund Shabazzian. So really he's got to work on everything. I know that's kind of a boring answer. But it's true. There's really no one aspect, no one weakness I thought he showed tonight. He just met a better fighter.
Casey, how much blame is the MMA space going to give to Tarverdian after this fight? Because, you know, after the whole Ronda thing, he was getting crapped on for a while, even when Shabazzian kept winning fights. And there was always like a scapegoat needed, and Tarverdian just always seemed to be the easiest target. And it seems like he was starting to get a little more respect, as they say these days. But how much blame do you think he's going to get for this? And he shouldn't get any, by the way. It's just like Alex said, he's a 22-year-old kid. He's not even near his athletic prime yet.
The blame he gets will be unfair. It would just be basically just trolls being trolls. That's it. I mean, what Tarverdian did do, he found this kid who came into his gym when he was 12 or 13 or something. And in 10 years, he made him an A-level elite middleweight fighter, fighting in the UFC, main eventing a card. That is an incredible accomplishment for a coach. So, sure. The treatment he gets is unfair. Now, what happens after this, though, that might be a different story. Let's see how he handles this loss. Because, of course, if you ask, I mean, we're now just going back a little bit, but, you know, after Ronda, of course, lost to Holly, we were, as far as we know, when you talk to other coaches and things like that, nothing really changed with Holly's camp or anything when she kind of took the break to fight Amanda Nunes. Was there any chance that she had? Now, how good we know Amanda Nunes was, I don't know if Ronda could have done anything better for that fight. But I think for Shabazian, let's see how his next two fights are before we really judge his coaches. But so far, they've done an amazing job.
Yeah, give him a decent name at 85. Someone, I'm not going to say beatable, because there's only tough fights at 85 at this point. So don't be throwing him in there with Hazmat Shamayev or anybody like that. Give him a fun fight at 85 against, you know, a decent name, Amir Shard or something like that. Like, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I think Shabazian, I think he has the UFC isn't going to have a tough time trying to find the right fight for him. But I'm really curious, though, is how much the UFC promotional machine is now going to be with them. Because, I mean, because right now they were really just like with what's the young lady that lost to Roxanne? But Macy Barber, just like Macy Barber, they were selling the whole youngest champ ever. As soon as they start putting those graphics on the screen, they lose their next fight, you know, so that's out the window now. So, I mean, it's very, very unlikely that Shabazian will have an opportunity to become the youngest champ now. So, a lot of question marks, though, how his future is going to be.
Yeah, bouncing back from your first loss, that tells a story for sure. What else we got?
We got lots of stuff.
Casey, did you see that question from Nick Burgeon?
Oh, I just had it. Where did he go?
Okay. Well, all right, Nick. I know Nick has been waiting, loyally waiting to have his question answered.
Not sure if you guys saw this. I'd like your take. Borg has now missed weight 4 times and pulled out of 9 fights. What does the UFC do with him? Interesting question. There have been rumors swirling, and I cannot confirm this, but this is, you guys may have heard this rumor as well, that Ray Borg may have been released from the UFC. Now, I'm not saying this is fact. I'm saying these are rumors that are swirling around right now. And listen, Ray Borg has gone through a lot. And as a father myself, I cannot imagine what this man has gone through over the last few years with his son and everything that has happened. Like, I don't even know how he even focuses on fighting with everything going on. So if something happens with his kid and there's a phone call, now listen, you know, he's sick, he's going back to the hospital, or something's not right, my ass is getting back on a plane and I'm going home to check on my son. So we don't know why he pulled out of this fight. We don't know what happened, but I know that's what happened the last time. It was a family emergency. He needed to go home. Family comes first. And I totally understand where he's coming from. However, we're in a situation where it's like, you know, you got to fight, bro. Like, you got to find a way to get in there and fight. So I understand both sides. So AK, what does the UFC do with Ray Borg now?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the veracity of the rumors that he's already been released. And I won't say that I think it's like I won't vilify the UFC for doing that. This is a business, right? Again, and I don't think if they did it, I don't think it's any indictment on, again, how he sort of handled his personal life. He's got to do what he's got to do. But at the same time, the company has to do what they've got to do, right? So, but for me, I think I wouldn't release him if it were up to me. It just might be bad luck. You know, for people who don't know, of course, you mentioned issues with his son. His son has a brain condition, and he revealed his last fight, which he withdrew from against Merab Dvalishvili. He revealed pretty sure, I think within 2 days or within a day, he kind of updated people on social media saying he did have to go home to just sort of address something that's going on with his son. Thankfully, it turned out to be nothing serious. So that was great news. this time, again, we're sort of still waiting to hear from Ray. And again, he is under no obligation to let us know what the situation is, especially if it is something to do with his son's health. But I understand why people would be more frustrated now, given that, again, the second fight this year that he has withdrawn. And if you look at just his schedule, you can go to Tapology and they keep a nice record of it. There's a long list of canceled bouts. If you go back to 2018, he's had way more canceled fights than he has had actual fights. So for the UFC, again, I don't think I wouldn't release him, but I don't blame them for doing so. I just don't think they should. I think he's still a talented fighter. And we really just don't know how many of these things are out of his control. you know, we really don't. But I'm the same person that keeps saying that they should book Habib versus Ferguson as many times as they can until it happens. Because, there's circumstances outside of people's control. It sounds like that's what's happening to Ray Borg a lot. So I say keep him around. But it's in the eyes of the fans, he unfortunately is getting a reputation as someone who just doesn't fight, which is why, which for fair or not, is one of the worst things you can be labeled in MMA.
Real quick, and then I'll let Casey respond to this. Edmund Shahbazyan has released his first comments since the loss to Derek Brunson. Said, "I'm okay, everyone. Just need some stitches. Thank you for all your messages. Love you all. Congrats to Derek Brunson tonight. Did a great job. No excuses. It's the fight game, and I'll be back. Blessed to have the support I have from everyone." That was from like a minute ago on Instagram from Edmund Shahbazyan. So, Casey, Ray Borg, your thoughts. What can the UFC do at this point?
This is hard to comment on because there's just a lot of unknowns, to be honest. Just true. Just a little too many unknowns to I think anyone to give a real solid opinion on it. But I'm assuming the UFC they've sat down with him and like, hey, like, what's going on? You know, is it simply your child's health? Because if it's about that, I mean, you need to fight. You gotta, that's how you make your money, you know? So it's not a good situation, and I hope the UFC handles it with maturity, and I just hope it gets because Ray Borg, he's an excellent fighter. He really is an excellent fighter, and everything's just unfortunate for whoever's booked against Ray Borg. But if you are booked against Ray Borg, chances are you're not fighting Ray Borg. That's all I know right now.
He got hosed out of a bonus with that Ricky Simone fight. That was the fight of the night.
Yeah.
Jacksonville card, by the way. He's probably still mad about that.
Yeah, but it sounds like there's something else going on behind the scenes between the UFC and Borg that we just don't know about, because things don't make sense. So too much missing information.
Got it, Kay.
Credit to the matchmakers for being able to find Johnny Munoz to replace Ray Borg and fight Nate Maness. And Maness did get his first UFC win. So like Casey said, it's unfortunate that Maness, you know, should have known that he would not end up fighting Ray Borg. But at least he did get a fight and got his first UFC win and a win bonus. So somewhat of a happy ending for Maness. But the Ray Borg situation is so murky, and whatever's going on with him, you know, of course, obviously, you know, I wish him the best and hope it is nothing, no more issues with his son. But he's whatever's going on has put the UFC in a tough spot.
Yeah. How about Johnny Munoz still in the third round on a day's notice, still hoisting Nathan Maness up in the sky and slamming him to the ground in the third round. That guy is a legit prospect at 35. Maness is too. So very excited to see what happens for the both of those guys. Maness, that's a tough fight to look good on. Because like when you look back at this card, you're like, oh yeah, Nathan Maness won, but you're not going to remember much from it just because of how Munoz is and his style, and he's just all over you. It's hard to look good against him. So thank you, Nick, for the question. What else we got? What's next for Bobby Green? Ooh. Casey, I'm going to give you this question. Because me and AK can't really answer this right now. We have to ponder this.
I'll throw something out there in a minute. But I'll do a little on to the next one tease. I can do a little on to the next one tease.
Right, a little tease.
Oh, I was going to let Casey go first, though.
Yeah, I'm trying. You know what? I feel like I need a list. I don't know. Like, I wasn't ready for this.
I'll throw some names out there. All right, here's what I got for you guys. And this is, by the way, I think most of these guys don't have fights booked. If they do, then I retract these suggestions. But Scott Holtzman.
Scott Holtzman is Scotty fighting Benil Dariush.
Is he?
Next weekend.
That's a good fight. You just went from Bobby Green to fight Scott Holtzman to like, hey, Scott Holtzman's got a pretty good fight.
I could not name what's next week's headliner.
Derek Lewis.
Lewis and
that's Lennox. Next week.
Yes,
I swear that's got
in that tiny cage.
Did that not just get like finalized like officially announced like 4 days ago? Am I crazy?
Like Yeah, but we knew it was happening.
Yeah, I know, but man, this is wild how fights are coming now. Okay, well, that's great. I should be more excited now because I've been wanting that fight since the Olenek last fight. So I don't know why I forgot. But again, that kind of shows you how rapidly the cards are coming and how quickly they're coming together. How about Drew Dober?
Because Drew Dober is obviously good. That's a good pick. But what happened to Gregor Gillespie? Did he ever wake up? I mean, where is he? Like he was on such a roll, the way Bobby Green looked against Clay Guida, I'm interested to see Bobby Green go against Gregor Gillespie, an even higher level wrestler. So
top ten guy for Bobby Green.
Why not, man? Come on,
he's been around.
Well, Dober. Well, okay, never mind. I'm looking at a different ranking.
Does Gillespie have a fight? Like, what happened to him?
No idea.
Still recovering, I guess. But you know, just taking us to fishing. He's gone fishing. Literally gone fishing. You know, we say that about people sometimes, like, oh, they've just been away for a while. He's probably literally just enjoying fishing.
Yeah. How about Green versus Fazeev?
Oh. There'd be so much fainting and dodging and shit talking.
Be like a kung fu movie.
Fazeev
against any striker is going to be incredible. So, but I think Bobby Green, especially their personalities and different and Bobby Green's unorthodox striking. Yeah, I like that fight.
I mean, the really only things that make sense, like I would say, like him and Jakar Close are probably like right around the same ranking, and they've already fought and they're like buddies now and they train together, so that can't happen again. Sarukian?
No.
You already know how I feel about Sarukian.
I love
Sarukian. I want Jim Miller. I want Sarukian
versus
Jim Miller.
Yeah, if you're going to have him fight a veteran, I think that's
the like more, a Brad Riddell. Brad Riddell. I don't know. Ooh, Hernandez.
Dan Hooker?
No, that's too far.
Bobby Green's in that weird spot where like he's been around for so long. This was his 37th pro fight tonight. And I think his 14th UFC fight, and you really feel like 13th. I'm sorry, and you really feel like he'd be competitive against almost anyone. You know, he just has that kind of game, and he's just been around so long. I'm not saying I would pick him to beat anyone in the top 10, and he's fought some. He fought Poirier already, but I feel like again, you throw him in there with I think he's like a Gillespie, a guy like Paul Felder, who I know is not going to take that fight now. He only wants a bigger name fights. But I absolutely think that Bobby Green could put on a competitive like 3 or 5 round fight against Paul Felder. He definitely could. So he is a little bit difficult to matchmake for at this point.
Mohegan Sun, Alexander Hernandez versus Bobby Green.
I think Hernandez he lost his last one, but he is still
Dober.
He is still ranked, I would think, ranked higher than Bobby Green. I have him ranked higher than Bobby Green personally. So it's not,
by the, much.
It's not the suggestion. Yeah, it's not. It's like kind of a cluster of the outside the top 15 from like 16 to like 30. There's kind of a cluster.
I feel like they're all interchangeable.
A little bit. It's really hard to separate them at that point.
If you're going to give Bobby Green a top 15 guy, I think Gillespie is probably the only one that makes sense right now. I'd like to see Green against anybody, especially the way he's looked in his last couple of fights. He looked awesome tonight. Yeah. He looked fantastic.
Yep.
And he's got a story that I want to hear more of. No doubt about that.
He's always got a story. If anyone's ever interviewed Bobby Green or listened to a Bobby Green interview, he's got a lot of stories.
I am working on that for What the Heck already. Trying.
There's a little tease. But
Alex Hernandez versus Lando, though, I kind of like that, too.
Yeah.
I like Lando versus Kama Worthy. I think that's a great fight.
That's a good fight also.
Lightweight is just so good.
Yeah, I can toss out random names like awesome fight. You're great. That's genius. Yeah.
Bobby Green has been fighting for 12 years. 37 fights in 12 years. This man has really seen it all.
Yeah.
I forget. I have an awesome Bobby Green story. When he fought in Affliction, I cannot remember who he fought.
I'm looking now. He fought Dan Lazan.
That's it. It's Dan Lazan.
Yes.
I think that fight ended in nut shots too. Or like it was an incredible amount of nut shots. But what happened was Bobby Green got so excited waiting in the tunnel, he just ran, like, you know, they get the guys ready and then they play the music and they go. But I think they played some like just kind of generic DJ music and he kind of assumed it was his music. So he just runs out to the ring and just like high-fiving everybody, you know, and all the camera guys and directors like, no, we're like, we're in commercial break. We're not even like doing, like he's like by the ring, like taking his shirt off. Like, so we had to walk back to the tunnel and they do it all again. He did, and he came out and did the same exact thing, even bigger.
So, it's so funny.
I was like, I didn't know who he was at the time. I was like, that man's amazing.
That is great.
You heard that Black Hole Sun remix. Yeah. He said, get out there.
So, yeah, I've always been a big, big fan of Bobby Green. That is a crazy man.
Bobby Green versus Kevin Lee would be a lot of fun, too.
It's Kevin Lee. Oh, look at that. Yeah. Someone.
Fazee versus Bobby Green. John G knows what's up.
He knows.
Yeah. That's okay. Let me find another question. I missed this tonight, but I saw people talking about it. Was this on the promo?
Do you think Derek Lewis was calling Alexi Olenek Alexis on purpose, or he just didn't know how to pronounce his name? LOL.
Definitely didn't know.
Yeah, I'm going.
I'm going with that. Like, yeah. if you ever listen to like Derek Lewis's interviews and stuff, like he knows the bare minimum about the UFC in general, not just like the guys he's fighting. Like, especially like a guy like Olenek, he just knows, like, yeah, he's good at submissions. But that's probably, like, the only thing he knows about him. He doesn't watch fights.
When Rampage called Fabio Maldonado Fabio Mababobo or something. And it's like, he just doesn't know. I don't know. I don't think it's some sort of, like, sly trash talk. It's like, no, I don't know who the super is.
He fought Shamil Abdurakhimov in his UFC first main event in Albany, New York. That was the first UFC event I ever covered. And when you ask Derek Lewis about his opponent, he goes, I have no idea who he is. Like, yeah. I don't know. I can't pronounce his name. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. I don't even know who I'm fighting. I won't know who he is until I actually look at him after the weigh-ins tomorrow. That'll be the first time I've seen anything or know anything about him. And that's when I knew Derek Lewis is my guy. He literally watches no fights. He is just – the only thing he cares about in MMA is training and fighting. Other than that, he's not sitting at home watching all these cards. Like, when have you last seen Derek Lewis tweet about a UFC card? I can't remember.
Casey, do you want to read that?
No, please go ahead. I'm not a reader.
From Adamant Movies on YouTube. I'll read this with an accent to class it up a little bit. Derek just honestly cannot pronounce Alexi's name, LOL. He is not selling, but I guess he'll just roll with it like the balls was hot moment. That was Alex Lee reads a classy tweet.
There you go. Well done.
MMA fighting.
Was that a preview of our new podcast right here?
It's a new character I'm working on.
All right.
I'm just workshopping. I like to use these shows to workshop things.
You know, but back to Derek Lewis, though, I enjoy it. I love his. No, he messes with the media. He just for his own laughs. But like what Mike said, he isn't a fan of MMA. He doesn't watch the sport. And he's very upfront about this. This is literally a job for him. Like, he doesn't care about the fans. In that sense, you know, I do it for the fans. And he likes fans and stuff. But this is strictly a job for him. This is a paycheck. This is how he pays his bills. This is how he feeds his kids. And he doesn't care about that stuff. So he absolutely has no idea who his opponent is, other than this guy that chokes people.
And he's like one of the best guys to interview. His interviews are so funny. But I think out of all fighters, he might hate doing media more than any other one. Like, he hates doing media. He's not doing any media for this fight, by the way.
And I think he's fairly savvy about his image as well. Like, I think he's genuine, but I also think he's very aware of sort of the persona that he projects. And he doesn't care. You know, he doesn't care. He doesn't care if people think, like, oh, he's a bit, like, yeah, he's not pronouncing people's names right, you know. He doesn't care. He's very upfront about how he is. And I would say the only thing I would add is I think he does also enjoy fighting. He does strike me as someone. I bet he actually enjoys the in cage part of it, the fighting. But yeah, all the BS surrounding it, all the crap that we bring into the sport, he has no. I don't think he has any interest in that, and that's fine. Like, again, that's kind of what's so cool about him. Why fans like him so much.
Yeah, he is as real as it gets. Like, he is who he is, and that's it. Like, he's not like Colby calling Tyron Woodley Tyrone Woodley. Like Colby's obviously doing it on purpose.
Yes,
Vicente Luque. See, here's Vicente Luque. Should he get a top 10? I think the guy we're going to have the hardest time matchmaking AK on to the next one is Vicente Luque.
Yeah, because look, if you love watching Vicente Luque fight, you kind of don't care who he fights. You just want to see Vicente Luque do his thing. Now, at some point, of course, a guy has to go from being a highlight generator to a well, I don't think they do, but I think for a lot of fans, that's the case. You know, like a Donald Cerrone. You know, and Donald Cerrone, that guy could have exciting fights forever. But every two, three, or four fights, they say, ah, oh, let's throw in Cerrone with a top 10 guy and see what happens. And you know, he usually doesn't make it over that hump. But people still want to see it. I personally don't care. Luque is 27, so he's kind of right approaching that sweet spot of his athletic prime. Is he 28, something like that. I know he's actually younger than Randy Brown. And I would like to just see him taking care of business against almost anyone in the top 20. But again, given how good he is, and if you're a fan, I totally understand the urge to see him tested against the top 10 again. So he had the one fight with Wonder Boy, which was competitive but didn't go his way. So should he get a top 10? I actually am in agreement with Joseph Boza. Yes, I need to think of a name, but I do think if someone is free, I do think he should get a top 10 opponent.
Honestly, it's Damian Maia, if there's anybody in the top 10. But I think Damian Maia already knows where he wants to go with this. He wants Diego Sanchez. I think the only thing that makes sense is he gets the winner of Jeff Neal versus Neil Magny. I think that's all you can do, really.
I'm sorry, which fight, Mike? I was like, which fight? What are we calling this fight? Go ahead.
Oh, Neil versus Neil.
No. Neil on Neil.
Neil on Neil.
Neil on Neil. All right, the upcoming Neil on Neil fight.
The upcoming Neil on Neil. Whoever wins the Neil on Neil fight, that's who Vicente Luque fights next.
Thank you.
What's Michael Chiesa up to? Is he injured?
Surgery.
Surgery. So he's out for a while?
He'll be out for a little bit.
What about a man who's on a 3-fight losing streak, one Mr. Robbie Lawler? Is that too much violence? Would the commission not sanction that fight?
The question is, I think it's more, is Robbie Lawler in that kind of Damian Maia era in his career where he's just going to be taking fights that are really big fights in a sense, or fights he really wants? Because I don't necessarily Lawler wants to fight Luque. He probably would if it was a different point of his career. But yeah, just if we can make it happen, that'd be freaking awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, I don't know. That's a good one too.
Shamayev. Top 10 fight. Shamayev.
No.
Look, people are telling me Shamayev's the number one contender at welterweight right now. All right.
I'm not against it.
Man, that'd be tough for Luque. If I'm Luque, I mean, Luque, I feel like it's the kind of guy who wouldn't say no to anyone. But I mean, if that's a fight, I'd be like, why? If I'm Luque, why would I take that fight? But I mean, Chimaev has a lot, but he does have a lot of buzz around him, though.
Oh, no.
You want to kill that buzz? If you're Luque and you want to kill that buzz, you go like, yeah, give me Chimaev.
Chimaev's one of those unique fighters where even though he's way behind you in the rankings, you beat him, you somehow go higher up in the rankings. You know,
he's all the talk. He's all the talk of the town right now.
But you would not, if they put him in the top 15, if they put him in the top 15 last week, I think that would be more appealing to Vicente Luque. But that's the problem with a guy like Chimaev, is that there's no upside for a top 15 guy right now. Yeah, he's got hype, but when you don't have that number next to your name, you lose a lot of that appeal. That's why I think it's going to be a Cerrone or somebody like that.
I slightly disagree because I feel like there are certain fighters, and Chimaev right now is one of them, where you beat them no matter what their rankings are, you go up. Even though they're you beat Mackenzie Dern. Even though Mackenzie Dern has never been highly ranked, your name gets bigger. You beat Paige VanZant, your name gets bigger, even though they weren't ranked. So I think Chimaev right now is that kind of that unique spot in his career where despite his no number beside his name, you know. But
Miguel Baeza. I know you guys don't care about that matchup. I'm going to make Miguel Baeza Chimaev happen, just like I made #NeilOnNeil happen. Okay. I'm a taste maker. Okay. I will get people behind this Baeza Chimaev. When this matchup is announced, I will be front and center saying Miguel Baeza Chimaev is a worthy fight for both men at this stage of their careers. We do not need to rush Chimaev. Miguel Baez is a good fighter.
Chimaev is probably ranked, if we only get to see the top 15, but let's just say we have the rankings on Dana's whiteboard. Chimaev is probably ranked 25 spots higher than Miguel Baez right now.
That's absurd. Miguel
Baez
is
not absurd.
He just beat Matt Brown. He beat how can he be ranked lower than Chimaev? Chimaev beat a good fighter, but I think in Reese McKee, who wasn't even in the UFC as of 2 weeks ago. How can he be ranked higher than the guy who just beat my Matt Brown?
I will guarantee you that there are voters who voted for Khamzat Chimaev to be in the
top 15. I'm sure they did, but right. I feel like.
But if we're looking at it, I would say Miguel Baez is probably number 40 to 45, and Shemaev's probably like 20.
I still had Matt Brown probably ranked way too high. So I'll be honest with you. My rankings are not great because Matt Brown.
You're good. You can stop there. Your rankings are not
so
great.
I had Baeza at 24 because I have Matt Brown still in the top 30. So he just took Matt Brown's spot. But Matt Brown should probably be much lower. So realistically, like what did you say, like 40 something?
I'd say he's like 40 to 45.
Yeah, I think that's probably closer than where I have him now. I feel I need to change that. But I do not have Shemaev ranked anywhere. I have him like outside the top 50.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
He has one win at
170. What are we doing? Yeah. What are we doing?
No. It's the way he won.
And that's great. I agree.
There's freaking domination. And that was... Okay. Freaking domination.
You have to beat someone ranked in the top 50, I feel like, to make it into the top 50. That's crazy.
No, you don't, bro.
This is absurd.
Reese McKee is
he's solid.
Very legit win.
He's solid, very legit win. He has nowhere near the level of wrestling needed to even challenge Shemaev. I've been on record saying I think Shemaev is a future champion.
But he's not top 50.
Guys.
He's not top 50.
Future meaning 2022. Okay, he has not fought one guy in the UFC with any takedown defense. That is a fact.
So if I went through all of his previous opponents' fights, none of those guys have ever stopped a takedown.
You will have to do that first before I can answer that question. Because you're right. I actually cannot speak of his previous guys. I'm just saying, but neither of us know, right? So if we're just talking about UFC ranking, if we're going based on what most people are talking, the majority of people are just talking about the two fights they saw in the UFC, correct? These are two guys who have no takedown defense. That is a fact.
No, that is not a fact.
Sean Phillips? Are you serious?
I'm going to tweet him right now. Hey, do you have any takedown defense at all? Just wondering.
Sean Phillips, the first person will tell you, hell no, I have no takedown defense.
I don't want to go to the ground. I've never learned any of that stuff.
His nickname is Mike Tyson, I think. I think he literally only wants to box. I didn't say it, but yes. I don't see the world through that lens, Mike. But
that's just an actual nickname.
I know. I'm just saying. Yes. Shemaev is great, but the hype is crazy. It's crazy for people to say he's like should automatically be thrown to the top 10. Let him fight one person with decent takedown defense.
Why he should get a big fight, Alex? Do you know why? Because every show we have done for the last week, we have spent more time talking about Khamzat Chimaev than anybody else.
I know, but look, we're a bunch of know nothing, pencil neck, soy milk drinking, clickbait artists. Okay, it's. Shut me down. Shut me down if you want.
No one even asked us about Shemaev.
We've been talking more about Shemaev than I think like Derek Brunson.
Our editor is going to cut off my mic any minute now, but I cannot lie to America. I cannot lie to Canada. Okay. We obviously are trying to drum up this prospect for our own headlines. Okay. And just for, you know, just get that sweet, sweet, sweet YouTube monies, that sweet, sweet, sweet internet, those sweet, sweet internet dollars. Okay. I like Shemaev, but I want to see more. I want
to throw him to Vicente Luque.
I think he beat him.
I hate you so much.
So crazy. All right, what else do we got? This is crazy. All you have to do is say Shemaev one time, and we've gone for 12 minutes about this guy.
I could talk about Shemaev.
Which is warranted.
I could talk about Shemaev for 3 hours.
Yes.
And how much how he's so overranked, but yet he will be the greatest fighter ever tomorrow.
but he should fight Vicente Luque.
Most talked about.
Jesus Christ.
King of Fight Island. The King of Fight Island.
All right. We're at an hour, guys.
Okay, let's,
right, one more. Yeah, we'll do I, one more.
One more. We're getting lots of Shemaev.
Is it about Shemaev? Yeah. Yeah. So Shemaev?
Cerrone needs Shemaev. Shemaev needs Cerrone. Yeah. You're right, Mohegan.
I won't argue with that. I won't argue with that.
This is Mike Hex's burner account. Man, Mohegan Sun, man, this Mike Hegg is very handsome.
bald for life. All right, one more question.
Okay.
Non-Shemaev. Scroll all the way back up.
Yeah, I got
Shemaev versus Usman, who wins? Oh. Just kidding.
I'm thinking about it.
This won't be our last question, but I want to touch upon this because I was going to start talking about it on the presser show about Mike Perry because someone just said Shemaev Perry, which I would love because I would love to see Shemaev beat Mike Perry's head in.
Whoa.
Look, So Mike Perry did issue an apology on Twitter today. I don't know if we have it handy. Sorry, I should read the, I should read it out in his own words. I don't want to misquote the man.
Let me pop it up.
Yeah. Sorry, we had it. Someone had it out there. For people who don't know, of course, Mike Perry was involved in a recent sort of public altercation. There's a lot of there's a lot of coverage by us and other outlets and video of him getting into this sort of unfortunate altercation at a bar. Sorry, Casey, do we have that?
Second. Here we go.
So, okay, there it is. So this is, here's Mike Perry. I want to be a better role model for my family, for my unborn son, for my queen, LaTorre Gonzalez, and for myself so I can earn the respect I deserve. To my sponsors, my bosses at the UFC, I want to apologize for how my actions have impacted our relationships. I will be better all around. Os. Classic martial arts sign off. Okay, look, Mike Perry is not a good dude. Sorry, Casey, can we have that up at the bottom? You can cover my name or something, but...
Okay, one second.
So, of course, speaking in a perfect world, someone like Mike Perry gets the help they need. Because, yeah, obviously, there's something's going on with this guy. He needs help. And it is good to see him saying things like, I want to be a better role model, of course, for his family. And, of course, for a lot of fans who look up to him. Though I think most of them like him for his fighting ability and not necessarily his being a role model. Just put it over my mouth. People don't want to hear me talk anyway. There we go. Perfect. That's perfect. Very parasite-y. I like he also said he needs to earn respect. I think it's important that that a young athlete understands that, because I think, I think fighters and athletes can get their head inflated, especially when they reach the UFC and feel entitled to a lot of things. So him recognizing that is a good sign as well. I don't like him saying to my sponsors and bosses, I apologize for how my actions have affected our relationships. That's the least things that he should be concerned about. That sounds like almost like, please, don't make me lose my job, and I don't want to lose my sponsorships, which, again, I'm not, that's me putting words in his mouth, by the way. That is not what Mike Perry said. That's an inference. He does need to be better all around, but actions speak louder than words. It's fine. The apology is okay. I don't think it's the best kind of apology. He didn't apologize to anyone specifically, other than, again, sort of sponsors in the UFC, but not necessarily the people involved in the incident, which he might not want to talk about, though, because that is still in litigation. So I'm very critical of Mike Perry. I'll say that if anyone hears my comments, you'd sense, of course, some bias against the man. He should get help. Yes, I don't think it necessarily needs to be in the public eye. I don't think he needs to keep getting UFC fights during this period. If he's honest about getting help, he needs to step back, I think, from this fighting career and really have an honest go at it. Cause I don't think publicity and the glory of fighting is going to benefit him in any way.
I will say this. If there's one thing that can change this man, it is becoming a dad. Like, if that doesn't do it, what else can be done? Like, how does that, like, that should motivate you in every way, like to be the best person possible, to be a champion, to be the best in your sport, like whatever it is that you want to be better at, like that alone should be enough fire to make those changes. So hopefully finding out that LaTorre is pregnant, will help facilitate those changes, because, Mike has said some pretty awful things. He's done some pretty terrible things, but he's also kind of like must watch TV when he fights. Like the buildup to his fight with Mickey Gall was like bigger than the main event. And then when that event was over, what were we talking about? We were talking about Mike Perry and the way he was at his post-fight press conference, the way he was in his post-fight interview with John Anik. Like that was great stuff. And then just when everything seems to be turning the corner, the whole incident happens. And it's just like, he cannot get out of his own way. So hopefully with all of this happening in his life, you have to be responsible. You can't just take being a parent for granted. Maybe this will be the thing that sparks that change. But like AK said, actions speak louder than words. And hopefully this can be the beginning of the help that he needs. And I want to see him come back. I love a comeback story. I like when people can get their heads together and do good. And I still want to see some of that old Mike Perry. There's some, choice language I would hope he avoids from now on. But at this point, I want to see Mike Perry fight and do his thing. Not right now. Let him get the help he needs and like to see a new and improved Mike Perry back in the octagon, but that's my piece on it.
Yeah. I think Mike Perry is actually a very, a very talented athlete and a very good fighter. Sure. And I hope he gets his shit together. That's all. And I hope people behind the scenes can help him with that and getting the proper therapy and things like that. And they're creating a new person for this world. So I need Mike Perry to be a good person to help raise that extra person they are bringing into this world.
For sure.
Yeah, and that things work out for him and Latour, because he did raise one good point after he won his last fight, saying, "Man, it was really unfortunate that Latour got dragged, this girl got dragged into, so much of the negativity that comes his way on social media." I mean, yes, she's become a public figure now because she's associated with him, but I mean, I can only imagine sort of heinous things that she was getting on social media for no reason. As far as we know, has not done anything wrong. As far as just other than being Mike Perry's girlfriend. So for her sake, for the sake of the child, for his own sake and fans of his, he needs to get it together. And if that means never fighting again, maybe that's what it takes. Maybe he needs to be removed from this environment and find another way. But again, that's the extreme end to this, scenario.
I like to see him off of social media.
Yes.
That would be a good way to help.
Yeah.
Get ready to wrap things up.
One last question. And this will be our last one.
Let's do it. Sure.
Shamayev, how many titles can he win? What's next for JoJo? That was a bad loss. They basically pulled the Frankie Edgar. Sheesh.
I just got a text message from someone close to JoJo, and she said that JoJo is doing fine right now, and she's back home, and it's no concerns. But I think it was just this, basically just it was just the stress from the loss and just kind of everything, kind of. So that's all. We don't know, nothing's real official, but JoJo right now is fine and at home.
I'm gonna throw a name out here, AK.
Do it.
Because I don't want to, like, after what happened in the fainting and stuff, I'd like to see JoJo take some time off. Maybe come back November, December. And that would line up for the return of another 125er that people have been excited about that is looking to come back from a loss. How about JoJo Calderwood versus Macy Barber?
Oh, I like it. I like it. I don't have anything bad to say about that.
I like it. I like it. I think it's a good fight.
There you go.
It's it's one of those fights. I was like, ooh, that's very risky for both fighters, which I like. Both. Macy doesn't want to have back-to-back losses, and JoJo's losing. Obviously, doesn't want to lose back-to-back too, but losing to someone that's so far behind her in the rankings is a big risk too. But I think that fight, yeah. Macy's one of those people too, even though she doesn't have a number beside her name, or does she? Or a number beside her rank? Is she ranked in top 10 right now? I don't think she is. But
she's probably like 12.
Somewhere from 11 to 15.
So
probably.
Outside the top 10, and considering JoJo's top 5, it's a risky fight for Macy. Risky fight for JoJo. But I like that fight. I like that fight.
I got a name. First, I'm going to say I'm a JoJo fan. Since I've already, shown how biased I am talking about fighters anyway, I'll go the other side of it. I'm a fan of Joanne Calderwood. I think a lot of people are. She seems to, she has a very memorable personality, good and entertaining fighting style. And just had to sympathize so much with her for taking that. That was tough to watch, taking such a high risk, low reward fight and getting the absolute worst, outcome out of it. So it's kind of a weird one, but a fight that I think would keep her in the Valentina Shevchenko sweepstakes, why doesn't she just fight Antonina instead, maybe? Antonina was certainly below her in the rankings, but style-wise, a good matchup for her. If she beats Antonina, then you have that storyline again, sort of like, oh, she beat one Shevchenko, now you throw her back in the title fight, which, again, she should have gotten anyway, but she had to stay busy. She had to stay busy, and she got a good opponent, and things happened. So I'll throw Antonina's name out there.
I don't want to see Antonina Shevchenko anywhere near Joanne Calderwood. I just don't want to see it. She needs to take like 5 steps back. She needs to fight like the Justine Kishes of the world. That's who she needs to fight.
JoJo.
No, Antonina. Antonina.
Oh, okay. I was like, what did?
No, JoJo? No. She needs. Oh, you're saying for Antonina's sake. Yeah, Antonina needs to
I can understand that.
The Luana Carolinas of the world. That's who she needs to be fighting. Get a couple of wins, and then look at the murder. Like Roxanne. Pudilova Chukagian. Like, that's that's a party. I mean, that's like, you're 8-2 just coming out the contender series. You hadn't fought like really anybody. And you get Roxanne, your first fight. Lucy, Caitlin Chukagian, like, they threw her like a murderer's row almost for her first three fights. Like, take her back. Take her back. That's what I think. But
okay with that. But yeah.
Yeah. But I see where you're getting at.
Yeah. But yes, that was one of the sadder stories to come out of tonight's card. But but again, good for Jennifer Maia.
Yeah,
good for Jennifer
Maia. Yes. Sad story for JoJo. Great story for Maia.
Gotta be happy. She looked great. From
November of last year to now, what a turnaround for Jennifer Maia.
That was awesome. What a time to get your first UFC finish, right? And that was awesome.
Yeah, yep. Dana was impressed and said the right thing. So next week, we're back again. And we'll get Tuesday night, we get the Contender Series. Bellator is back on Friday with a big card. Chandler versus Henderson 2. And then we got the UFC on Saturday. We got Lewis versus Oleinik, Weidman versus Akhmedov, Darren Stewart versus Maki Pitolo, Yana Kunitskaya versus Julia Stolyarenko. Yeah. Beneil Dariush versus Scott Holtzman. Tim Means versus Laureano Staropoli. Nasrat Haqparast is back against Alex Munoz. Sanchez versus Wellington Turman. Justin James is back against Gavin Tucker. Yusuf Salal, the loudest cornerman in UFC history, is going to welcome New England's Peta Barrett to the UFC. And then Irwin Rivera is back welcoming Ali Al-Kassai to the UFC. That's going to open things up at 135 pounds. So we get some fun fights on the horizon.
Dude, and that Bellator card rules too. Don't.
That's a real good Bellator card.
It's a nice Bellator card also. So Friday and Saturday is like, luckily we have no social lives. I had to turn down all these party invites because they're such great fights, guys. So.
Yeah. It's just so much going on. I'm so excited the Contender Series is back. I know that's like another night of covering fights, but I love the Contender Series.
That's a pleasure to cover.
Absolutely. So yeah. That's coming.
As are eight fight cards, by the way.
Yes. Eight fight cards are great, but Contender Series, five fights, boom, 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 in and out, 2 hours, see you later. I love it. So that's it. We have talked enough about UFC Vegas 5. It is almost 2 a.m. Eastern time, but appreciate all the questions and the comments. And we're just going to have to do a Shamayev hour every week on MMA Fighting Live, and we'll answer all your comms at Shamayev questions. So for E. Casey Lydon, for Alexander Kaylee, I am
Mike. Drink milk. It does a body good.
Coke too.
Unless you're lactose intolerant, oat milk is great, guys. Try oat milk. I'm just saying.
Rice milk or almond milk. Yeah. All the milks.
Yeah.
Right. See you later.
Expand your horizons, bro.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.